This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 52. Well, good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is, folks. It's a show focused on everything to do with fantasy books, whether it's epic fantasy, grimdark, urban fantasy, swords and sorcery, you name it. If it's fantasy, we've got it here on the show. And you can expect to find the best and brightest authors from all the various corners of the fantasy book world joining me here for interviews on a regular basis. Let's check in with me and what I'm doing with my author world this week. First off, I'm getting ready to launch Prophecy's Child in 1 week on August 9th. That's book two in my Broken Throne series. Book one, The Charm Runner, is doing pretty well, and I expect it will even do better once book two is out. It seems like that seems to be the case with these series that I release kind of close together like that. So I'm looking forward to seeing that kind of bump up in the rankings even farther as book two arrives. But I urge you to check it out if you'd like. It's based on the premise of a world where magic is suddenly declared against the law in a modern world. And what would happen with the prohibition of magic? Might it be something similar to what we faced here in the United States with the prohibition of alcohol back in the 1920s? Anyway, take a look at it if you want, and I urge you to check it out. At the same time, I'm actually writing on book three of my Sapiens Run trilogy called Cybers Underground. This will wrap up this series, and I'm really excited about that because it's going to open up my writing schedule to look at new projects. I love when I kind of wrap up a series that I'm writing because it gives me an opportunity to try to choose the next direction. It's kind of choose your own adventure as a writer, if you will. I'm trying to decide right now between starting a third accidental lit RPG trilogy, which will pick up where the second accidental trilogy left off, or maybe jumping into an epic fantasy trilogy that I've actually had working in the back of my mind for, oh goodness, 4 or 5 years now. I actually have book one entirely plotted out. So it's just a question of sitting down and putting the words down to paper. And I'm trying to decide. Maybe you have an opinion about that. If you do, you can reach out to me and either on Facebook or leave a comment here on the podcast site and let me know what you'd like me to start on next. And maybe I'll take your advice based upon what the consensus is. As always, if you're interested in more information on my books and what I'm up to, check out my fan group on Facebook, Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers, or on my website and blog, jamiedavisbooks.com, and of course the associated Facebook page, Jamie Davis Books. You can get a hold of me over there, so I look forward to hearing from you. Definitely let me know what you want me to start writing next. This week on the podcast, as we get into our interview section, we have author C.F. Wellburn on the show, or Craig, as he wanted me to call him in the interview, which is great. Craig describes himself this way. Born in the year of Star Wars, in the birth town of Charles Darwin, he caught the fantasy bug as a child at the top of a faraway tree, in a hole in the ground, and through a snowy wardrobe. He left Shropshire to study literature, travel the lands, and seek his fortune. He settled in Madrid, where he now teaches English and art whilst scratching his imagination onto parchment. I love the way he describes that. And for those of you that read as a child, you probably recognize those references that caught him, the fantasy bug. Maybe those are the books and stories that caught you as well. Check out my interview with Craig. It's coming up right now. So I want to welcome C.F. Wellburn, also known as Craig, on the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Craig, welcome to the show.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So why don't you give us a little fill-in about yourself? Tell us a little bit about your background and how you started writing.
Well, basically, I'm living in Madrid now. I'm an English teacher, teaching English and art. And in my free time, I try to write. And it's been something that I've been doing most of my life on and off. I'm not really sure how or when it started. In fact, I can't really remember a time where I wasn't doing it. But obviously, I think it stemmed from my love of reading, which started very early. Fell into the fantasy genre, and the rest is history, really.
Yeah, and you know, and I'm curious on what kind of fantasy books drew you into the fantasy world.
Well, I started off with the staples, so The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe and The Hobbit. I was also quite a big fan of the old fighting fantasy books. I'm not sure if you remember those. Gradually I started opening up. So then I went down the Tad Williams route. I was a big fan of him and David Eddings and Raymond E. Feist. I'm probably saying the many similar books to how a lot of people get started. There was a time where I kind of went away from fantasy, but purely because in university I was studying literature and I had to read a lot of more classical stuff. And then I came back in a big way because I started catching up with a lot of stuff I hadn't read, and also backtracking to all of the classics which I hadn't heard about, and some of them even like predated Tolkien. So some really interesting stuff there.
Awesome. And, you know, I'm a big fan of a lot of those people you named, Tad Williams. David Eddings was one of those books that every now and then I actually have them on audio, and I go back and I listen to the whole, both the Belgariad and the Meloriad series, just to kind of get a sense of that story again, because there's so many things in there, so many great characters that he created. And then Ray Feist is just a genius. We actually have had him on the show here, and it was a lot of fun chatting with him on the podcast. And I can completely agree with you that there's just so many people out there that have written great fantasy. It leads me to my next question, is how do you feel about the fact that there are people out there who say that every fantasy book is derivative at this point? And I don't necessarily agree with that statement, but with so many great fantasy books out there, how is it we keep coming up with awesome stuff to write?
That's a good question, because I definitely don't think it's derivative at all. Obviously, there are certain tropes and there are certain things that we expect from fantasy books, but it's amazing that every year a new book comes out which just seems to push the boundary or try something new. Maybe it's because there's so many writers now that we kind of push each other in a way. I'm not really sure. Obviously, there's been a bit of a boom with fantasy in recent years with Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings, the films, and then Game of Thrones, the series. I think it's a lot more popular now than it was. But there's so much talent in the indie writer world that it's some of the ideas that are coming out now are just incredible. And maybe the ideas wouldn't exist without the process of what's gone before it.
I agree with you. I mean, I think that there's plenty of ideas left in my head that are unique enough in themselves. And you're right. There are tropes. There are things people expect from a fantasy book. There's going to be magic. I know I write a lot of urban fantasy in addition to the lit RPG epic fantasy that I've written. And that urban fantasy, you know, you have to have that magic element that is hidden from the rest of the world, that, you know, most people don't know there's a magical world going on behind the scenes, the kind of Harry Potter thing, or what goes on in so many different urban fantasy books where the average person is completely oblivious to the magic that's around them. And then, you know, the epic fantasy stuff, I think you're right. Game of Thrones has really opened the door for epic fantasy and grimdark and so many things that have to do. And maybe this is a good time to segue into your books, the Ashen Levels series, which is just fascinating. I've really enjoyed reading it. I've only really just scratched the surface, but your Ashen Levels books are actually out in a compilation of all five books now. And that is called the Ashen Levels. You can get them individually, but why do that when you can get them in a box set, right?
Exactly. Well, it was originally written to be one book. That was always my intention. But I split it into five parts as a way of kind of drumming up a bit of interest and maybe by releasing them periodically, getting a few people on board for each release. it didn't work out exactly as I planned. But once they were all done, I always envisioned it being in one volume because I quite like big books. But the only problem with that is you lose the nice artwork from each of the individual covers as well. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword.
And your covers are quite striking, I have to say. Who did your artwork?
It's actually a friend of mine, so I was quite lucky. He's a German guy, and he's into that kind of thing. He's not really into fantasy, but he's an artist for his job. So I gave him a copy of my book before I'd finished, and I didn't really expect him to read it, but he did. And he came back to me, and then many, many Skype conversations later, and we had the five covers in place. And I was quite picky because I had an image in my mind. But luckily, because he'd read the book, he knew more or less what I was talking about. And the good news is we're still friends now, so didn't push it too far.
It's an interesting relationship with an author and the person that's doing their covers, especially in the indie world, because, in the traditional published world, you never have much control over your cover art unless you've specifically had that written into your contract. You just kind of get whatever cover you get. And so it's kind of interesting, you know, as an indie, and I have a very good relationship with my cover designers. I've used three over the years, although there's one that I work with quite frequently. And he and I chat all the time just about stuff, not just covers. And it's become quite the friendship. But it sounds like you started with the friendship and then kind of really developed a good cover out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought at first his work might be some of his work's very abstract, but he worked on the cover of my first book, The Linguist, and I really liked that. So I asked him if he'd do this again, and he was pleased to help. I think it's good for him as well to do something a bit different.
Yeah, we all need to stretch ourselves a little bit, don't we?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's boosted his portfolio a little bit, but probably it's the only fantasy thing in there amongst many of the other stuff he does.
So let's talk a little bit about the Ashen Levels, because I'm really intrigued with the story and how you kind of fell in this. And like you mentioned, it is akin to considered, I don't know if I consider it lit RPG because I haven't seen any tables, but it's definitely game lit. In other words, it seems like the person is leveling up consistently. The main character is Balagir, right?
That's correct, yes.
And
because I guess game lit is really like a light lit RPG.
Yeah, I mean, game lit is the overall, I mean, it's kind of like, game lit is the rectangle, lit RPG is the square. So, one can be the other, but not the other way around. Tends to be, for people that don't understand this, like lit RPG is a type of book that is a game within the book. The story is that somehow there is a game associated with the book, and the main character or characters level up through the game, a gaming sort of process. And that can be in a lot of different ways. Some people do it through virtual reality. Some people do it through magical portals. There's lots of different ways to do it. And I haven't figured out what's going on in your books quite yet. But although I know that this main character awakens in a world where he doesn't understand where he is or remember where he came from, and all he knows is he has to continue to like do tasks and accomplish things to continue to kind of get powers.
Exactly. Yeah, I kind of came at it from the other angle. I wanted to write like a normal book, but instead of the magic system, I used gaming mechanics. So you could probably read the book right the way through and not really realize, well, I guess you'd realize, but you wouldn't really need to know anything about gaming or not necessarily like gaming. But the mechanics are there in the background to make the world function, really, and to give them a purpose. So the aspect of leveling up, collecting smoke, paying the piper, completing oaths, that would be your typical quests and experience in a game. But whereas in a game you're doing it for a reason, I guess these guys needed a reason, which was the addiction that they get from doing it. And also there had to be a lot of rules in place to stop them going against the designs of the Piper as well. So there's consequences if they don't do what they're meant to do. And yeah, they're basically driven by this need. And Ballet Gear, the protagonist, is definitely driven by a need to discover where he comes from and why they are doing what they what they've been made to do by the Piper. So it's a little bit of a mystery in that respect as well, and a journey of self-discovery.
And I know the first couple of oaths that, that Ballet Gear has to complete are really dark and creepy. I mean, you know, the stuff he ends up running into, and you know, there's dangers in between each of his quests that he has to complete that are a little scary and kind of freak you out a little bit. So if you like a book with a little bit of a dark edge to it, you've definitely accomplished that.
Yeah, I found the writing process really enjoyable because the first draft, I was really just pantsing it. I had a very, very vague idea of where it was going, but not too much. So I was kind of discovering things at the same time as the main character was. And I never knew what was going to be around the next corner. As you say, in the first few chapters, several things happen even on the way to completing an oath. And that was kind of the fun thing about the writing, was populating the world with very bizarre circumstances and little tasks along the way. You probably haven't got to part two, but the part two is mostly set on a ship. And it was kind of like my ode to Homer's Odyssey in the way that each chapter is a different island. And it became quite fun to think what's going to happen to him on this island, or what kind of strange things going to be awaiting him here. Or so it'd be kind of, in the writing process, I was trying to beat myself each time to sort of build up on my ideas. So they weren't sort of anticlimactic after something else. So it's challenging, but a lot of fun.
It definitely is. And I like, you know, even in the first book, which is where I am right now, the, you know, there seems to be, I almost call it like a flowchart kind of sense to it, where there's going from, like, they call them hubs. You're calling it hubs in there, where they go to from place to place to pay the piper. And it seems very much like that kind of same thing, though, even in the first book, where he's kind of going to these different settings that are part of his quest path. And I really like the concept.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose the hubs would be like, I read before that you're an avid gamer as well, so you probably get where I'm going with this. But I play a lot of open world RPG games. And I guess the hubs would be like your safe spot. So within the fire circle, nothing can harm them. So if they were being chased by something and they make it into the hub, the fire circle, then they will be safe. They can probably detect that something is beyond the barrier waiting for them. But as long as they're there, they're okay. But that also works as a double-edged sword between themselves. They can't cause each other harm in the fire circle, because if they do, there's severe consequences for that. And the hubs later on become a way of fast traveling like you would in an open world game, but they can't just zap around willy-nilly. Again, there's consequences for doing that. They would have to sacrifice smoke, which would mean they wouldn't be able to use it to become more powerful, which is their ultimate drive, really, because enable to survive and to have the one-upmanship on their companions.
No, it's just a fascinating kind of setting, and it goes back to what we talked with at the beginning when we were talking about, you know, are there new things to be seen in fantasy? And I really kind of, I have to say, I haven't read anything like this. It's definitely a different take, not only on the fantasy genre, but on the game lit setting as well, that you know, there's definitely leveling up there, and there's definitely game mechanics at work in there, and but it's I don't want to say hidden, because it's there, but it's just couched in such a way that it's very clever in the way it's presented, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's kind of below the surface. You kind of know what's going on, but it's not necessarily important to have a gaming background. But there are quite a few little winks in there. I don't really want to give any spoilers away, but the little niggles of games where you've got a bottomless pouch, which you can pretty much put anything in. But as soon as you put one acorn too many, all of a sudden your character can't move. Or you've fast traveled to the other side of the land, and why is your horse there when you call it? So these sort of things were quite fun to write in there. There's another section with boundaries. So in a video game, maybe you can't access a certain area until you're powerful, or the map is blurred until you've been there and discovered it. So all of these things are kind of going on. But like you say, under the surface, it doesn't really interfere with the story directly.
So you said you pantsed it in the beginning. Is this did you have the concept of the story idea, you know, the world and the way it was laid out? Or did you start with an idea of the main character? And because I like the main character, but he's so vague, at least at this point in my understanding, mm-hmm. that it seems like the world is really taking front and center.
No, exactly. I guess I grew with the main character because he's completely lost at the beginning. And he comes full circle by, well, I don't really want to say too much, but he definitely develops as a character as the world opens up and he learns more about their presence. But it's funny you should ask that, because they originally started as a short story, and the short story was going to be just about a campfire, and the campfire was going to be like the ears of the conversations of the different travelers. So I thought it'd be quite an interesting idea, really, that the travelers would come, tell their story, and then drift off into the night, and we would be listening from the point of view of the campfire. But it just so happened that the first character that sat by the campfire was Balagir, and I started to think, I want to see where he goes from here, and that's pretty much how it started. And then I started having the idea about the leveling up, and then I just sent him out in the world on an adventure, and I was along for the ride with him. Obviously the second and third drafts were a little bit more meticulous, because some of the ideas I came up with halfway through, or even 70-80% of the way through, I had to go back then on the second, third draft and tie them all in so it all worked. But yeah, the first draft was just fun, really. I didn't know what to expect, and I really enjoyed it.
You know, it's funny. I often wonder what readers would think if they saw our first drafts. Even on a computer, mine are so marked up. I mean, I leave like little highlighted notes for myself in the middle of the text. Like I put brackets in and I write something and then I highlight it in yellow just so I can find it again. And yeah, it'll be like, oh, I got to go back and put this character in two chapters ago or something like that. It's interesting how we leave ourselves little notes as we write.
Oh, exactly. I used to, if I was having a bit of a struggle with something, I would go for a walk. I find that's a really good way to get my ideas flowing. And then I would have my phone with me with an application like Evernote or something. And I would always be, I need to do that when I get home, write this. And so I need to kind of make a note of something and then do it directly. Otherwise, I'll just forget. But yeah, definitely tie in all of the loose ends together on the second and third draft. It was kind of a big job. I think the first draft took me nearly a year to write. I wrote it all the way through without stopping at the same time as working, but in my spare time. And then the second and third draft took nearly as long again, because just going back, dotting the I's, crossing the T's, and some of the main characters that came into the book, I didn't even know about them when I first started writing, and it ended up becoming that they were very crucial to everything. So yeah, I had to backtrack, and even the name The Ashen didn't come to fruition until most of the way through the first draft. They were originally just called Travelers or Wanderers, and then I settled on that name in the end. So yeah, very much a learning process.
Definitely. Now, you said you wrote it all the way through. Did you write all five books at once and then come back and separate them? Or are you talking about just the first book?
No, yeah, I wrote all five books in one go. And that's why I class it as one book, really, because this story is just one arc from the beginning to the end, from the conception of the fire until the revelations and twists at the end. So, I mean, there's plenty of other things going on. There's normally a little bit of a cliffhanger at the end of each part and at the end of most chapters. But, yeah, I wrote it all the way through because I, like I say, it was really one story, and things that happened in the fourth or fifth book affected things that should have happened in the first book. So I needed to go back and make sure it was all tied up and there were no, like, loopholes.
No, that's an important part of the process. And, you know, I have a series that's on, you know, moving on into eight books now. And every now and then it's my readers catch me on something. They'll say, "Hey, wait a minute, this person's name changed." And I didn't take really good notes in my first couple of books that I wrote. And it shows, because I've now I take notes as I write. You know, if I introduce a new character, I stop and write their name down, where they are, what chapter, and who they are. And then I go back and continue writing, because otherwise I get completely lost.
That's a great idea. Yeah, I was more afraid of painting myself into a corner by coming up with a great idea later on and then thinking, oh no, I've shot myself in the foot because I've already said that there, so now that wouldn't work. So I think some of the best ideas came towards the end, but luckily, because it was all in one first draft, it did allow me to go back and implement those ideas. And some of them changed the story quite a lot, really, because Balagir's journey was still pretty much the same, but things that he was learning had to be in a different order.
So out of curiosity, you know, when you interact with your readers, is there a particular way you like reaching out to people or having them reach out to you?
Anyway, really, I'm pretty much available on most social networks, but I would say 90% of the time I'm on Facebook. I haven't really got into Twitter or Instagram that much, even though I do have a little presence on there. My website's up and functioning, but I'm not quite sure how many people visit websites these days. So I would definitely say Facebook's the easiest way. Drop me an email, anything really. And also on Goodreads as well. Pretty much as long as I get the message, I will respond. So anyway that's easiest for the person. I'm everywhere.
that's exactly what I do. And you know, I will just tell you, people can go to websites, and I've driven a lot of traffic to my website over the last several months through some marketing and you know, pushing people to just go look at it. It's helped drive traffic and increase awareness and increase more people going to my website. So it can be done. I think what the trick is just to help people understand where you are and the different ways that they can interact with you in each location. Because there's, you know, you can email me directly from the website, whereas all you can do on Facebook is leave a message and tag me and hope that I get it, or same as Twitter or something like that. And while I may or may not get those messages, I always check my email. So it's one of those things. I think it's just a question of helping our readers understand the best ways that the two of us can correspond, because it may be different between different people.
Exactly. Speaking not as a writer now, but just as an internet user, I remember checking out websites all the time of the bands I liked or games and things like that. But now I probably I follow them on Facebook, and it's very rarely I go and seek out a website of something, maybe occasionally for special reasons. So, I'm not quite sure. I did design the website because I thought it's nice to have a base, but I'm not quite sure how much traffic it gets, or I try and keep it updated. And like you say, anyone who writes on there goes to my email, so I'm 100% going to see it anyway.
Yeah, well, and you know, I think I learned this a long time ago as a podcaster, and it is that you control, if you control your own point of presence, your own .com domain, then that gives you the ability to have ultimate control. And that's the only place you have control. Facebook can change the rules tomorrow, and frankly, they always seem to change the rules on how people can see you. And you don't have any control over your content, where it goes, or who you can really reach on other platforms at the end of the day. But you always control your own email list and your own Facebook, your own website. And so those are the places that I try to at least direct people to be aware of, if nothing else, so that if for some reason Facebook were to fail tomorrow, my readers would still know that they can find me at jamiedavisbooks.com, just like you have cfwellburn.com. And I think that, you know, it's important for authors and all creatives to have their own, you know, their own personal landing page, just so that, you know, Facebook, you know, when I started this, MySpace was a thing.
Right. And, I remember that vaguely, yeah.
You know, and you have to, I think we have to remember that MySpace was the thing and was the end of the world. There was never going to be anything like it. And then Facebook came along. And we say that Facebook will do the same thing, except that I think there'll be something else to come along. And so we just need to wait and see what the next thing is and be prepared to be flexible, I guess, as authors. So
exactly, not putting all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah. So what else are you working on? Do you have anything else coming up next after the Ashen levels?
I'm just on the summer holidays at the moment. So I'm a teacher normally in the term time, and these 2 months now are where I get nearly all of my writing done. So I'm actually going back to a book I was writing before the Linguist and the Ashen levels. I was started writing it in London, and for some reason or another, I just kind of put it on the back burner, and then I got caught up in these other projects. So I've gone back to that, and I kind of realized that I liked the characters, I liked the setting, but I wasn't very happy with the story. So I've taken the good things out, and I've started from scratch, and that's pretty much what I'm doing now. I can't see it being out until late next year, but I do think it'll be a duology, so probably one book late next year and then one book early the year after, if it all goes to plan. But yeah, it's completely different from the Ashen levels. It's not lit or RPG or game lit. It's a lot more traditional, and where Ashen levels follows only from Balaguer's point of view, because I wanted to keep it very narrow, so everything's a bit of a mystery and a discovery. This is more multiple point of view characters, so several of them, well, at least two are going to be antagonists. So I thought that's going to be quite an interesting angle to write from after being just in Balaguer's head. So yeah, I'm quite interested to see where that goes.
Well, awesome. I think people will look forward to seeing that. And I urge people to check out the Ashen levels, get the full edition with all 5 books in one. The price is, I think, usually $6.99. Is that correct?
So it works out a lot cheaper than getting it individually, because if you buy them all individually, I think it works out almost double that. Even though you do get the nice covers, but I think it's nicer to get it all in one.
Yeah, definitely. So folks should check it out. That's The Ashen Levels by C.F. Wellburn. And again, you can find out more about what he's up to, Craig's up to, over at cfwellburn.com. I will have a link to your Facebook page and your book. It's your books themselves. Craig, thanks so much for coming on the show. And when you have that other book, the next book that you're writing ready to come out, get a hold of me a month or so ahead of time, and we'll make sure we have you lined up so your show is available when it comes out.
Oh, great. That sounds like a plan.
Awesome.
And good luck with your current projects as well. I know you've got an upcoming release, even though probably by the time the podcast's out, it will have been out, but yeah. Good luck with that.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And Craig, take care.
Thank you. Thanks, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And that's going to wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you catch up with us online for a whole lot more from the whole fantasy-focused community. You'll find them over on Facebook as well as at fantasy-focus.com. And of course, at that site, you'll find our podcast living in the little podcast tab at the top of the page. Leave a comment when you get there on this episode. If you have a question for myself or Craig, we definitely want to hear from you. Also on the website where each podcast episode is posted, you'll find links to subscribe to the show on your favorite mobile app, whether it's iOS, Android, or whatever, whether you use apps like Stitcher or TuneIn. Even if you want to subscribe and get an email notification of new episodes, you can do that. But make sure you head over and subscribe so you don't miss any of the episodes. We've got some really amazing authors already scheduled for the next few months, and you'll want to keep up with what's coming up on the show next, including our next episode featuring Emily Knight. And you definitely won't want to miss that one. That's it for this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook at Jamie Davis Books and at my website, jamiedavisbooks.com, where if you want to kind of check out my writing, you can get a free book to try out. Just go ahead and sign up for my newsletter there in the right-hand column when you get to the front page. Whatever you do, though, you want to get the podcast and subscribe and come back here for the next episode. So do that. And in the meantime, I'll remind you to, as you go about your day, make sure you keep your eyes open, because guess what? There's magic all around you.